Hello and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly radio magazine of most things culturally considered. I'm Sarah Cahill, sitting in for host David LaTulipe, who you will hear this hour in a pre-recorded segment he prepared with pianist Ludovico Einaudi. We'll have some tickets to give away for his show later in the hour. Also this week, Scrumbly Coldwin, writer, composer, and pianist for the Coquette's show Tinsel Tarts in a Hot Coma, is here in the studio to talk about it, and Marilyn Levinson of San Francisco Cabaret is also here to tell us about the upcoming tribute to Marvin Hamlisch at the Fairmont. In addition, Joshua Cosman will be here to talk about the month ahead in classical music, so stay tuned. My first guest is Scrumbly Coldwin with the Coquettes. Thanks so much for coming to KLW today.
Thank you.
Very exciting. Tinsel Tarts in a Hot Coma premiered in 1971, and you've restored it and added some new songs. Performances are tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday night here in San Francisco, and through June 29th. It's been extended now.
Thursday through Saturday.
Let's first talk a little bit about the Coquettes and how it all began.
It all began with someone called Hibiscus. And you really, I can't say it in 15 minutes. I can't give you the history. So go see the marvelous movie called The Coquettes. It came out in 2003 that actually won Newsweek's top 10 list that year of all movies, not just documentaries. It's a wonderful, wonderful movie by Bill Weber and David Weissman. And it really tells the whole story, including how we took the Tinsel Tarts in a Hot Coma to New York City.
Which is a great story. Truman Capote went and said, "This is the most outrageous thing I have ever seen."
Yeah, Rex Reed wrote the nationally syndicated review from the Chicago, I'll say the wrong one if I say which Chicago paper it was, but he said something to the effect of, if you haven't heard of the Coquettes, you're really not very connected to life.
That's a great quote. So this is at the Hypnodrome, which is 575 10th Street in San Francisco. We should mention that thrillpeddlers.com is the website for information.
Thrillpeddlers.com.
And it's been extended. It was going to last until June 1st, and now it's been extended. Is that
right? Yes, correct.
And what?
And if people keep coming, as they have been coming, and selling out the houses, we'll keep extending, but that has to you have to come first.
Now, so you're the show's musical director. You're playing piano in all the performances.
Uh-huh.
And
I do a couple of songs, too. One from the piano, and one of the other characters takes over for me while I get up and recreate something similar to what I did in 1971.
That sounds intriguing. And you've added 18 new songs. So what has that experience been like to take this show from 1971 and add 18 songs to it?
Absolutely amazing. You know, this is the fourth Coquette show that we've revived at Thrill Peddlers over the past 4 years. Pearls Over Shanghai, Hot Greeks, and Vice Palace were the preceding ones. With this one, with those others, there were quite a few songs that I wrote back in the day, but this only had four songs. So I said, okay, we have to replace all these standards like Lullaby of Broadway. I have to write something to take the place of Lullaby of Broadway. What'll I do? And I don't know. My experience has been at the ripe old age of 67 to have this feeling like it's just channeling through me. It's just coming out, you know, effortlessly.
Do you feel they're in the same style as the songs you wrote in 1971?
That's kind of what I write, in the style of the 1930s. And that's how I write the most prolifically.
Tell us about the cast. There are three original members.
Myself and Sweet Pam Tent And Rumi Masabu were in the original production, yes.
And so then you've added other, obviously, other cast members.
There's a cast of 25 on a rather small stage, so it gets to be really exciting.
The small stage you mentioned, it's the Hypnodrome in here in San Francisco, and 10th Street between Bryant and Division Streets. What kind of place is it?
Well, it seems like you're just going to a secret place, you know? You have to go, enter through the parking lot, through this door. Oh, that must be the door. We had a society lady, should I say that, come in and to see the show because she'd been to see the Cockettes back in the day. Oh, she thought she was going to come in through the loading dock. And she was prepared to climb up on the ledge. It was great.
Great. The website, again, is thrillpeddlers.com, thrillpeddlers.com, for information about the Cockette Show, which has been extended through June 29th, Tinsel Tarts in a Hot Coma.
Mm-hmm.
Should we listen to a little music, maybe, from the show?
Hey there, mister. If you like me, then you gotta like my sister. Cause I'm stuck to my sister, and I'm stuck on you. If you kissed her, I'd be jealous if you only kissed my sister. So I just must assist her, hey, kiss her sister too. They say that modern makeup can cover any flaw, but a cover for my sister, Max Factor never saw. Don't be narrow when you could be a gay caballero, cause I'm stuck to my sister, and I'm stuck on you.
That's music from Tinsel Tarts in a Hot Coma, the next Cockettes musical that you can see through June 29th, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 8 o'clock. That's tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday, and then until June 29th. Brownpapertickets.com or thrillpeddlers.com are the websites. 800-838-3006. 800-838-3006. I'm Sarah Cahill, filling in for David LaTulipe here on Open Air, and my special guest is Scrumbly Cold... How do you pronounce it? Coldwin. Scrumbly Coldwin. And you wrote all the music, directed the show, all the words. Is that right?
I sure did. Not all the words. Pam wrote a few of them. Like, for instance, her song, and we collaborated on some of the ideas for the songs. That last song you heard is sung by Siamese twins. Hey there, mister. If you like me, then you gotta like my sister.
We just kind of jumped in there without really talking about what the show is all about. Tinsel Tarts in a Hot Coma. What is it? Tell us about it.
Well, as the Cockettes, back in 1970, 71, when we started out, at the Midnight Movies at the Palace Theater. They were called the Nocturnal Dream Shows. And we got to see there, some of us for the first time, all those great movies from Busby Berkeley, for instance, and other musicals like the Fred and Ginger musicals and so forth. So this was our paean to those movies. So we took these very loose plots and we made our own very loose plot. Actually, we took all the songs we wanted to do, and then we made up a plot that would string them together. So it's, you know, there was a lot of back and forth between, you were either Broadway or Hollywood. So that's what the show does. You go back and forth between Broadway and Hollywood. And I won't give you all the ins and outs of this, but it involves characters like a social maven in New York City called Antisocial, an actress, a big diva in Hollywood called Madge the Magnificent, who, you know, quits and walks off the set in a big huff and decides to go back to New York and take the stage again. And it's all very, shall I say, the plot might be termed LSD influenced, seeing as how it's from those psychedelic times. So, for instance, we don't know whether we're in a movie or whether we're in, quote, reality. You know, because at any point when we think we're in reality, the director might yell, cut, print that, or, you know. Then we have dream sequences, of course. There's a little bit of Wagner-type opera. It's my first experience in writing in German. That was a lot of fun.
Ah.
And there's a lunch counter scene. There's Tarzan comes off one set and sings about how he's looking for the perfect banana. You get the idea.
So at the first performances, and, you know, when you read the Rex Reed write-up, which is very alliterative, in 1971, you really sort of, I mean, is the shock and surprise that was there then, has the world caught up to the Cockettes, do you think?
You know, in some respects, yes. But in other respects, people still recognize that Thrill Peddlers carries on this tradition that the Cockettes have. We recently got written up, got some Silver Award, Thrill Peddlers did, and at the end it says, life, you're not really alive unless you're breaking the rules sometimes. And that's what Thrill Peddlers loves to do.
Yeah. The website is thrillpeddlers.com for tickets to Tinsel Tarts in a Hot Coma. The Cockettes had a hiatus, right? I mean, you weren't going for a while, and then...
Oh, we were very short-lived, but, you know, things back then seemed very intense. And in the 2.5 years that we existed, it seemed like about a decade. A decade's worth of experience, because, wow, what a roller coaster it was. It was the most amazing part of my life. And, you know, we did, without planning to, we did have a great influence on theater, according to Rex Reed.
According to many people, I think. Let's listen to another song. Tell us about this one that we're going to hear.
Well, this particular one is interpolated from Hot Greeks, one of the shows that we did. I changed the word slightly for Tinsel Tarts, but you'll get the idea. It's Three Chorus Boys.
The life of a chorus boy is filled with romance.
Rich baubles, fresh flowers, and lots of hot pants.
Expensive gifts and long weekends away.
Oh, please don't believe what they say.
We're the boys of the chorus, and though you just adore us, please don't believe what they say. They call us gypsies, exotic showbiz folk, but the boys of the chorus are the oldest showbiz joke.
We're tall and we're handsome,
muscular and trim,
but who'd pay the ransom if they
kidnapped me or him?
We're the boys of the chorus, and though you just adore us, please don't believe what they say.
Of a chorus boy is filled with long hours,
torn costumes, torn muscles, and lots of hot showers.
Too much coffee and cheap places to stay.
So please don't believe what they say.
We're the boys of the chorus, and though you just adore us, please don't believe what they say.
Of the business, the industry's workhorse.
We took that barge and lift that flag. We're underpaid, of course.
A show's success can rise from a thigh that's well defined.
It can stand on our shoulders
or ride on our behind.
We're the boys of the chorus, and though you just adore us, please don't believe what they say.
Great. From Tinsel Tarts in a Hot Coma. That sounds pretty exciting. And it's a 45-seat theater with 25 people on stage.
46.
46.
And a half.
An extra seat. Uh-huh. Great. Wonderful. Thank you, Scrumbly Coldwin, for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah, wonderful. So Tinsel Tarts in a Hot Coma with the Coquettes. You can get tickets online, thrillpeddlers.com or brownpapertickets.com. It's Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays at 8 o'clock through June 29th at the Hypnodrome, 575 10th Street here in San Francisco between Bryant and Division Streets. Thank you so much. Coming up soon, Marilyn Levinson of San Francisco Cabaret will be here, as will music critic Joshua Cosman, who will share his classical music picks for the month ahead. And as I mentioned, host David LaTulippe has a pre-recorded segment with pianist Ludovico Einaudi. Let's listen to that next.
That's the music of Ludovico Einaudi. He and his ensemble are in town for a concert at the Warfield on Saturday, June 1st at 7:30. Einaudi, a grandson of a former president of Italy, was classically trained at the Conservatorio Verdi in Milan, also studied with Luciano Berio, and at Tanglewood in the Massachusetts Berkshires, summer home of the Boston Symphony, and one of this country's preeminent training grounds for musicians. After composing in a more traditional fashion, he found his own voice, which now incorporates reflective, minimalist piano writing with modern but very tonal writing, creating atmospheric soundscapes that take their time, unwinding, building, then sometimes receding or reaching a very intense climax. He's composed music that was part of the scores of a number of films and television soundtracks, including Joaquin Phoenix's fascinating film, I'm Still Here, also for Dr. Zhivago, a British TV miniseries which was aired in the U.S. as part of Masterpiece Theater, and Aquario in 1996, for which he won the Grolla d'Oro, or the Golden Grolla, one of the oldest Italian film awards for Best Soundtrack. He's also released a number of solo albums of piano and orchestra, including I Giorni in 2001, Nightbook in 2009, and most recently In a Time Lapse in 2013, which is the title of his current tour on this continent in Chicago, Vancouver, Boulder, Colorado, L.A., and again here at the Warfield in San Francisco on June 1st, before heading back to Italy for a number of dates in July. And he joins me now from the studios of WBEZ in Chicago. Ludovico, welcome to Open Air.
Hello, hello.
On this world tour, you must be encountering a variety of audiences and venue sizes. Does any single place stand out as particularly memorable so far?
Well, I started the tour in Canada, and it was very nice to play in Montreal and Toronto. I enjoyed very much also the venue yesterday in Washington. New York was an historic place, the town hall. And I have to say that the venues were very different, but everyone has a character that make it memorable in a way, even if everyone is different.
Have you visited San Francisco before?
Yes, I've been there quite a few times for concerts and also for vacations visiting. And I love the city. I love the weather. I love the vibe also of the city, because there's a very interesting mixture of California, but with sort of European feel.
It's interesting you should say that, because other people have had that same thing, that San Francisco has sort of a feel of a European town. I'm glad that you've able to spend a little time here rather than just coming in and out. So often these touring professionals will come through and not be able to enjoy the town. So do you tour? Do you tour with your own instrument?
Unfortunately not in America, because I do that in Europe with a Steinway. Where I travel around.
Is that your preferred instrument, the Steinway? Is that your home instrument as well?
Yeah, I have a Steinway at home, and yes, it's very difficult with the instruments, because even if you say, okay, this is the instrument that I want, but every instrument is completely different, and especially with pianos, it really depends who takes care of the instrument. So you can have the same model of the same year, but one instrument is very good and the other one is not.
Sure, sure.
So, but basically, with Steinway, I like to play them. I sometimes, when I find a bad Steinway, I prefer to play Yamaha, because the Steinway is very good if it's in very good shape. If it's not, it becomes not very good.
Right, right.
And I like the action, more easy action of the Yamaha, and sometimes the Yamaha stay, the lower level of Yamaha is better than the lower level of Steinway.
Interesting. Now, imagine that every instrument is different, but with the electronic enhancement that you're incorporating into your shows, how important is the quality of the piano you're faced with if it's less than up to your standards?
Well, it's very important, because, of course, even with the ensemble, with the electronics, with other instruments, you really feel, especially when you play with other people, if the piano has a body, if the sound is enough thick to be able to stand in the middle of the other instruments. If it's weak, you just hear the attack, but
sure,
you don't hear the body.
It's the most important part of the of the ensemble, of course, with you at the keyboard.
Yeah.
Now, tell me, what is the makeup of the ensemble that you're touring with on this tour?
Yeah, the ensemble is, there are a lot of strings. We have two cellos, two violas, and four violins. And then there is a percussionist. And one of the violinists is also playing the tambourine, frame drums. And then there is a guy that is working with electronics.
Are these the same instrumentalists that you've been working with in the recording studio?
Most of them, yes. Those coming with me here in the tour are the ones that in the album plays the solo parts. Of course, we don't have here touring the orchestra that is playing in the album, but we managed to arrange some of the music for a smaller ensemble.
Sure. Now, talk to us a little bit about your compositional process. When you write, are you sketching out the larger picture of the entire piece you're working on, or perhaps letting it build piece by piece as ideas come to you?
Every piece has its story behind. Sometimes the piece comes very quickly and you see immediately the image, and then in 2 days it's done. Some other times you have an idea, then you develop it slowly, day by day, adding things, and then you are not satisfied, so you have to wait a bit and then you work again on it. And generally, when I work with orchestra, I tend, a certain point, I tend to record a sort of like a demo for me with the samplers, just to get an idea of the shape of the piece and also the amount of sound, just to have like also the shapes in terms of amount of orchestral weights. that I want. And so this is what I do. So before going to rehearsals and recording studio, I have almost all the album. I can listen to it at home in a sort of digital way, but I have this give me the perception of the rhythm of the entire thing.
Hmm. Now, in this time that we live in of short attention spans and instant gratification, your music seems to fill a need for reflection. It's almost a meditation, taking its time to unfold, almost as the title of your tour implies, in a time lapse.
Yeah, I think it's a reflection that is connected to the idea that we tend to lose something with all the possibilities that we have today, that you can do everything very quickly. But then you, in a way, start to lose the connection with the simple things of life that you perceive when you're a child. And that you learn from every moment of your day something new, even from a very simple approach with things around you. And it's a reflection that I was doing. And I was also reading the book Walden by Henry Thoreau, the writer, American writer that was living in the 19th century, and he wrote this book about his life in the bush, living in a little house, in a little cottage that he built himself, and he was notating all the movements of the nature day by day, all the sounds that he was hearing in the forest. And this, I mean, it's a reflection of how you can also, with the music, you can slow time. You can even sometimes arrive to the edge of the silence and to where everything is still, like the nature.
Yeah. Take us back to your time at Tanglewood, if you would. Now, that must have been some very traditional training there. Now, is it there that you discovered your own voice?
Well, I was quite young at that time, and the surrounding was beautiful with lakes, a lot of trees, forests, and it was very nice to have a lot of exchange with other musicians and composers, performers from all different levels. And at the time I was still studying with Luciano Berio, my teacher, and so it was at the beginning of my path, and there was something that I was discovering and something that I had to discover still.
What was the most important thing that Berio impressed upon you?
Well, he was a very open mind, and compared to other composers of that generation that were very intellectual, sometimes too much intellectual. And he was also very open to other styles of music. He was basically taking inspiration from different sources, from African music, from folk music. He wrote those beautiful arrangements of folk songs from different parts of the world. He was transcribing the music of the Beatles as well as experimenting with electronic music, and also working with Mahler symphonies on his piece Sinfonia. I came also from a background that, in a way, I built myself, but with an open dimension and an open view of the music. So I found in him a good teacher to talk about everything I could and I wanted to explore with music. And basically, he was saying that you can transcribe anything that you like into music, into a piece of music. And I remember once we were in the countryside together, and he was watching the sky, a group of birds, and he was saying that could have been interesting to make a piece of music that was taking inspiration from that interleaves of movements between the birds, between the shapes they were forming in the sky.
So always being aware of your surroundings and being open to ideas to incorporate into your music. That's wonderful. So how much of your time is taken up with touring?
Well, this year is very busy. It's taking a lot of time because I started touring in February, and the album is released in all the countries around the world, and they want me to perform, and I enjoyed it. Sometimes I miss staying home, but this is what I wanted to do. So it's you miss the relation with your family, and but basically I like to play around, and this year will be like that. Next year maybe I will be more calm.
Sure. Well, after the touring is done and you're able to settle back home, what other projects are on the horizon for you?
Well, next year I want to spend more time again in composing, because it's when I'm touring, it's quite difficult to have the time for concentrating. And even if some ideas comes, you just can take some sketches. And then next year I want to go back. I have to write a piano concerto. It's a commission from English orchestra, and then I want to write more solo piano music. I want to write a nice new book of music for piano that probably I will record I don't know when, and then probably there's a film project, lots of things. And every day now there are, I receive emails for collaboration, so I have to start to say no.
Yeah, that must be the difficult thing, to find the time that you have for yourself as well. It must be difficult.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we wish you the best for this tour and beyond, and we hope you enjoy your time in San Francisco when you arrive.
Yeah, I'm sure I will. Thank you very much.
And thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
I'm Sarah Cahill, filling in for David LaTulipe here on Open Air, here on KALW. And my very special guest now is Marilyn Levinson. Your organization, Bay Area Cabaret, is presenting a gala birthday tribute to Marvin Hamlisch this Sunday at 7:30 at the Venetian Room of the Fairmont. And what a great composer he was. This would have been his 69th birthday.
That's right. Sunday. That's right.
Yeah.
We knew we were going to do our fundraising gala on June 2nd. And then by coincidence, it turned out to be Marvin's birthday. And as you may know, Marvin actually reopened the Venetian Room for us in 2010 when Bay Area Cabaret reopened the room after it had been dark for 21 years as a musical venue. So he came then, and he brought Maria Friedman, who's a fabulous British musical theater actress, and Mark McVeigh, who did a beautiful program entitled Marvin and More. He was sort of actually quite modest, and he said, you know, I don't want a whole evening of my work, and let's break it up, and he did. It was wonderful. And so Sunday's program is going to be different, because it is going to be dedicated exclusively to Marvin's work. And in fact, there'll be quite a few ballads, because most of his most beautiful songs were ballads.
It's amazing how wide-ranging his career was, too, that he did music for Woody Allen films and then Behind the Candelabra, right, which was just on last Sunday, premiered on HBO, the Liberace movie. He arranged the music for
right.
that.
Right, and The Nutty Professor.
And The Sting, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Oh, and so many. Same time next year, of course, Sophie's Choice, which really surprised me, one of my favorite movies, in addition to, you know, all of those, the musicals and songs that we already know.
What are your own favorite Marvin Hamlisch songs?
Well, I guess I'd have to say that Chorus Line affected me. Do deeply when I first saw it here in San Francisco at the Kern Theater. And, yeah, I think, Bobby, we have one of our performers
here.
Yes,
let's bring Bobby Conti Thornton into the conversation.
Hi.
Great to see you.
Yeah.
So tell me about how did you two meet, and you're an amazing, I mean, you sound like you already have an amazing career at this young point in your life.
He's actually too modest to say, but he is in the musical theater program at University of Michigan. He's off to St. Louis Muni Opera to perform a lead in Les Mis this summer.
Oh.
And then in the fall?
Yeah, and then in the fall, I'm going to actually be studying abroad at RADA, Royal Academy of Dramatic Art in London, just doing about 4 months of Shakespeare and classical theater.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So, yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah,
it's very exciting to be back at the Venetian Room. You know, Marilyn was has been amazing support of my career and my talent. And so it's very amazing, especially and then as a musical theater student, to be doing a music of Marvin Hamlisch, who's just, musical theater and all of us involved in it owe a great debt to him because of, you know, what he's done for this art form.
What are you going to be singing?
I'm singing two songs. I'm singing I Can Do That from Chorus Line, this great little number.
Complete with tap dancing.
That's right.
But his own choreography.
There you go. And then this beautiful song called At the Fountain, which is from one of his shows called Sweet Smell Success, which was not as popular, of course, as Chorus Line, but one of the most just beautiful songs written for a male tenor in the musical theater.
Well, it actually has some special significance for you.
Yeah, it's the song is basically about a mentor when someone's taken under the wing of a mentor about how your life, you can see the life you've always dreamed of and because of this person. And my own mentor named Richard Nicole, who's my voice teacher for about 8 years, passed away very suddenly last year. And the last song we worked on together was At the Fountain.
Oh.
And so it's very significant, just about what the song is and who I think about when I sing it. So it's very sentimental. And, you know, we owe Marvin for that song and coming up with this gorgeous music. And the song is very much an homage to George Gershwin and the way he writes. And so I think it'll be an exciting evening.
Mm-hmm. I wish you could sing it for us now on the air.
I warned him that you might ask. I have to talk to his agent about that.
Oh.
But it really, it's not hard to be supportive of Bobby's talent. He actually in 2011, he participated in Bay Area Cabaret's Bay Area Teen Idol competition, and he swept it. He won. So one of the things he won was the chance to perform, to open for one of our artists in the following season. So he opened for Tony winner Laura Benanti, and it was a huge success.
Mm, that's great. Should we listen to, I think we're going to listen to Barbara Streisand doing The Way We Were.
Fantastic.
Amazing. Yeah. gets you every time. Barbara Streisand singing Marvin Hamlisch's The Way We Were. The Chronicle today said that Alan Bergman will sing The Way We Were at the gala tribute this Sunday.
Yeah.
And, yes.
It actually, his wife Marilyn, with whom both of them collaborated, will be there to share a reminiscence of their times working together with Marvin. And then Alan will croon The Way We Were. And they wrote it together. It won an Academy Award, of course. Marvin himself was one of only two people to have won an Academy, Grammy, Emmy, Tony, and Pulitzer Prize. But Alan and Marilyn Bergman are really show business royalty. They are, you know, Academy Award winners. They are Songwriters Hall of Fame members. Actually, Marilyn was the head of ASCAP for quite a long time. And I think that Alan's involvement in Alan's version of The Way We Were is going to be probably a highlight of the show.
The website for information is bayareacabaret.org, bayareacabaret.org. And Marilyn Levinson, it's your organization. And you're going to be announcing the next season. Is that true?
That's right. That's right. We'll be announcing our 10th anniversary season, and Smash fans will be happy.
Oh. Tell us about, just briefly, about the other performers.
Yes, absolutely. I was worried we were going to leave them out. They're fabulous. Karen Mason, who is a wonderful cabaret singer and also a Broadway singer from Mamma Mia, Hairspray, Sunset Boulevard, she's going to be performing, as will the Bay Area's favorite Christine in Phantom of the Opera. Lisa Roman, who sings with symphonies around the world, has a beautiful soprano. She'll sing Ordinary Miracles and some other numbers.
Wonderful. And this is all at the Venetian Room, and that's a very special connection to Marvin Hamlisch.
Absolutely. And it's just such an elegant, beautiful venue. I hope people can come at 7:30 on this Sunday night.
Wonderful. And again, the website for information, bayareacabaret.org. Thank you. Thank you, Marilyn, and thank you, Bobby, for
thank you.
Coming
thank
in
you,
and talking
Sarah.
About the show. It's great. Up ahead, Joshua Cosman will talk about June in classical music, what to look forward to. I'd like to give a special thank you to Neil Swinkles, who produces Open Air here on KALW, and the amazing Kevin Vance for running the whole operation today, running the board. And I'm Sarah Cahill, filling in for David LaTulipe. And again, you're listening to Open Air here on KALW, and it's wonderful, always wonderful, to see Joshua Cosman, critic for the San Francisco Chronicle. You're here sometimes for Minds Over Matter on Sunday evening.
That's
so
true.
I get to see you then in the studio.
Oh, right. We pass as ships in the night on the way in and out of the KALW building.
And so this is a relatively new feature that you're here on Open Air talking about the month ahead in classical
That's
music.
That's right. We've been doing this since the beginning of the calendar year, since January. David has had me on as a guest, usually the first Thursday of every month. This month we kicked it back a month, mostly just so I could be on with you, but also because the month starts so late that by the time we got to the first Thursday,
exactly.
A couple of the things I wanted to plug
would have missed
today,
some of
exactly.
the things because it's the second week of June. Then
by then it's
good
right.
to think ahead.
It's practically July.
It's amazing that there's so much going on in June. It's supposed to be the month when you kind of end school and relax and have
a
summer.
June on the classical music calendar is a little bit it gets very compressed. You know, many of the organizations that kind of go from September to June are petering out. But then you have the San Francisco Opera and the San Francisco Symphony kind of come back to life with these big sort of end of the year blowouts. And then there's other things that are always fun to have too. So
tell us.
So I will. Yeah. I will tell you
that. What are we starting with?
Well, this week we start with the summer season of the San Francisco Opera. There are three offerings on tap. The first is very interesting, which is going to open this Wednesday, June 5th, at the War Memorial Opera House, a new production of Offenbach's opera, The Tales of Hoffman. This is a production that comes to us. It's a co-production with San Francisco Opera and the Teatro Liceu in Barcelona, directed by Laurent Pelly, and with an interesting stage design based on a Belgian symbolist painter who was news to me, Léon Spilert. You probably know all about him, but I'm not that.
I wish I did.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we'll find out. This is a production that was originally intended to be a showcase for the soprano Nathalie Desai, who was going to sing, you know, all four of the women who figure in the romantic life and imagination of the main character, the writer A.T.A. Hoffman. But then real life intervened, and she decided that all four of them was more than she could take on. So now the roles are being distributed around through four different singers. We also, there's a little bit of a snake bite about this, because we were looking forward to Alice Coote, the great English mezzo-soprano, to sing the role of Niklaus, who's A.T.A. Hoffman's sidekick and ultimately his artistic muse, and she pulled out too. So instead we have a singer who I'm not familiar with named Angela Brower, but who comes very highly recommended, and we have tenor Matthew Polenzani in the title role as E.T.A. Hoffman, and so that will give a good jump start to the summer's operatic offerings.
We have a little music. Yeah.
Thank you.
from the Tales of Hoffman by Offenbach. That's
the Barcarolle.
Yeah, the Barcarolle. I'm Sarah Cahill here with Joshua Cosman talking about the month of June in classical music. And yes, then we go on. I think listeners can look at sfopera.org. Is that right?
Almost. sfopera.com.
Oh, .com.
They're in it to make a buck. Right. So, you know, they don't. I don't know why that is the case, but it is. It's sfopera.com. Yeah, so the summer season at the opera continues after Hoffman. Then there's Mozart's Così fan tutte opening on Sunday, June 9th. And finally, the the really interesting headliner event, I think, of in some ways, of this summer season, which is the world premiere of The Gospel of Mary Magdalene, a new commissioned work by composer and librettist Mark Adamo. This is going to be a new look at the life of Jesus and Mary Magdalene influenced by various ideas from the Gnostic Gospels, and including an attempt, I guess, to bring the role of women and also sexuality back into the gospel story. So maybe there'll be great protests.
Yikes.
And yeah, I don't know. It's never quite clear how these things are going to be reacted to.
Mary Magdalene is sort of in the air, right? I mean, there was the recent John Adams piece.
There was the John Adams.
There's some other things going on too.
Well, it's interesting because, of course, she's been written out of the story for so many centuries, right, and so many millennia. Not that I have standing to speak about this, but I think it is generally an interesting thing to see these kinds of subterranean traditions being brought back.
Absolutely. And I should be able to speak about it because I'm doing the pre-concert talks for pre-opera talks at each of the performances.
Oh, so you probably
so
know more
early.
About it. Okay, I
no,
shall.
I'm going to bone up in a little bit. But yeah, The Gospel of Mary Magdalene. And tell us a little bit about Mark Adamo.
Mark Adamo is, he's a very interesting character. He was, he's a composer who started out as I like him because he started out as a music critic, although he was just sort of doing that on the side. But he got a commission from David Gockley when David Gockley was at the Houston Grand Opera. And he said, well, why don't you write a scene or something like this? And he wrote this scene and he sort of sent it along to him. And they said, oh, this is good. Make it into an opera. And that became this opera, Little Women, based on the Louisa May Alcott novel, which became a huge success for a number of reasons. One is it's really good and it's very manageable. And so it became a nice go-to piece for smaller opera companies. It's been done a lot around the country. And
they say it's the most performed American opera in the last 20 years or something?
I wouldn't doubt it. That seems entirely plausible to me. This is but it was a chamber opera, and then he did another one also in Houston for that I think was also a little bit on the small scale, an adaptation of Aristophanes' Lysistrata. But this is his attempt to write a great big grand opera with choruses and spectacle and all kinds of things. And yet it's a smallish main cast. We've got the magnificent mezzo-soprano Sasha Cook as Mary Magdalene. And I say magnificent because I just heard her sing the other week in the Missa Solemnis of Beethoven at the San Francisco Symphony. Usually when you hear a performance of the Missa Solemnis, you don't walk out saying, wow, that mezzo-soprano was really something else. But that was the case in this on this occasion. So we're looking forward to that. And we've got the baritone Nathan Gunn as Yeshua, which is to say Jesus, and William Burden, who was so terrific in Heart of a Soldier, is going to be Peter, and the soprano Maria Kanyova, who just sang Pat Nixon in Nixon in China last season, will be Miriam, Jesus's mother. Mm. And that opens on Wednesday, June 19th at the San Francisco Opera.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk fast because I've got a couple other things that I want to make sure to get in here, and time is running short. This coming Tuesday, the 5th, or unless it's the 4th, the 4th of June, a new concert series called Curious Flights, which is run by a local clarinetist named Brendan Guy. They've already done their first concert, but this is going to be a very interesting one because it introduces us to a piece that is sort of by Benjamin Britten. This is a piece with the title Movements for a Clarinet Concerto, which was assembled by the English composer Colin Matthews out of a number of discarded sketches that Britten left. There was a clarinet concerto that he was working on in 1941 when he came to the United States with his partner Peter Pierce. And for reasons that I don't know, it was confiscated by immigration, all this material. And so
because they thought he was a communist?
Is that what it is? That seems plausible enough, but I don't know.
Because he was a pacifist.
There we go.
Bad news.
Yes. So take his music, then he can't agitate for pacifism. That makes sense.
They thought there was a code embedded in it.
Is that right?
Yeah. That's what I read.
Okay. Then you know more about it than I do. As is
I think
so
it was
often
in the Chronicle
case.
Today, actually.
Oh, okay. There we go. I haven't... Okay. Anyway, we're going to hear a little bit of it right now.
Okay.
It's a little bit of the first of the three movements for a clarinet concerto assembled by Colin Matthews from sketches by Benjamin Britten. That's going to be done this Tuesday, June 4th, at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, 50 Oak Street. And the information there is curiousflights, all one word, .com. Moving on to later in the month, we have the Ojai North. This is the Berkeley-based version of the Ojai Festival, which has now come every year for the last 3 years to Cal Performances, thanks to the efforts of the director, Matthias Tarnopolsky. And this year, Mark Morris will be the music director and also will be unveiling, and I'm so excited about this, the world premiere of his new dance based on the Rite of Spring.
That's exciting.
And when I say the Rite of Spring, I don't mean the orchestral music that you keep hearing all the time. This is the version of Stravinsky's music as arranged for jazz trio by Ethan Iverson and the Bad Plus.
Right.
So a whole different take on the Rite of Spring in this centennial glut year.
Yeah, and he's going to be my guest a week from this Sunday on my radio show on Sunday night. And also, I think the focus is on Henry Cowell and Lou Harrison. Is that right?
New music in general. I mean, it's the same kind of American Mavericks crowd that we've been getting from the San Francisco Symphony, this time in a little different form. Yes, a lot of Henry Cowell, some John Cage. They're going to do Four Walls, pianist Ethan Iverson. And
a John Luther Adams piece outdoors, as they did last
year. Exactly, exactly. This is something called A Strange and Sacred Noise. Yeah, last year when they did Inuksuit, which was this wonderful outdoor percussion and extravaganza that they did in the glade behind Hertz Hall in Berkeley.
And there are a number of free events, I think, too. So people can go on the Cal Performances website and look at that.
Good. And finally, the San Francisco Symphony finishes its season with concert performances of nothing other than the West Side Story music by Leonard Bernstein. This is the first time that this has been done in a concert performance. Michael T.T. will be conducting the San Francisco Symphony June 27th to 30th at Davies Hall, sfsymphony.org.
Thank you so much, Joshua Kosman.
Thank you
That's
for having
it in
me.
A nutshell.
I'm out of breath.
Thanks to open-air producer Neil Swinkles and board operator Kevin Vance for assistance with today's show. I'm Sarah Cahill. A reminder that you can hear this or any recent editions of Open Air at our website, kalw.org. David LaTulipe will be back next week for Open Air. Thanks for listening.
KALW also has six pairs of complimentary tickets to Ludovico Einaudi's concert this Saturday at the Warfield, which we're offering to the first six callers who can telephone us now at 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134.